This is Pushing the Odds on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by O'Reilly Auto Parts and Rocket Mortgage.
Live from Las Vegas, here's Matt Perrault.
All right, just in time for our next conversation. Adam Schefter reporting from ESPN. Quarterback Justin Fields at his pro day at Ohio State was clocked at a 4.44 40, which is completely moving for a quarterback. That is fast. Let's talk to our first guest of the day, one of my favorites in the entire NFL sports media, Field Yates of ESPN, joining us here and Pushing the Odds. Field, Matt Perrault, how are you, bud?
Matt, what's happening, my friend? Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, good. Long time no talk. Good to get you on. So let's just start right there with what's going on with Field Yates. I mean, sorry, with Justin Fields, excuse me. What does a 4.44 mean for Justin Fields versus the Zach Wilson charging train up the draft boards?
Yeah, so here's what I would say is the 4.44 speed is certainly impressive. I don't know that it's like a surprise, right? You know, like if you watch Justin Fields play at Ohio State, which we all did, we saw the unusual athleticism that he brings to the position. The guy is just an absolute freak athlete. So it's one more way to sort of solidify his standing and his status within this draft. You know, I think for Justin Fields, the questions that people who are evaluating him have really aren't going to ever be tied towards the athletic ability, but rather towards some of the other elements of his game. To be clear, I'm a massive Justin Fields stan. Like, I actually think there's a case for him to go number two overall. But this is just one more moment for us to say, like, this guy's got the chance to be really unique and special in a league where eight separate quarterbacks rushed for over 400 yards last season. We're seeing an evolving NFL, and I think that Justin Fields could be kind of a perfect fit for that.
Walk me through the Zach Wilson story, if you could, because if we were talking in September and I told you that Zach Wilson was going to be number two, I mean, there was a debate going on about Justin Fields versus Trevor Lawrence, and I know he had some rough games, but the level of competition he played against game in and game out was so much higher than what BYU was seeing last year. Were people just sleeping on Wilson? Like, where did this come from where everyone now is saying Wilson's going two and there's no questions about it?
Yeah, there's kind of an inflection point in his career. He had a thumb injury during his second to last season at BYU, which was 2019. And he bounced back after that and just started playing as well as he possibly could. And he is an electric athlete, much like Justin Fields. Probably not. I mean, if you saw the two of them, Justin Fields is cut just differently. Justin Fields, you know, I hate to just make such simple comparisons, but in the same way that if you saw Cam Newton and you told me, or if I told you he played defensive end or linebacker, you'd believe it. That's kind of what you feel when you're around Justin Fields, whereas Zach Wilson is very fast and athletic, but not as physically imposing. But Wilson did have a handful of games against better competition, and this year he had just one that people really focused on, which was against Coastal Carolina, where they did not win the game. I thought he played fine in that game, especially considering they pulled it together in 48 hours. Remember, this was a game that was unscheduled until, I believe, Wednesday of the week, maybe even Thursday of that week, whether they played on a Friday or a Saturday. But I think Zach Wilson's rise is probably sort of it kind of aligns with his own recruiting process. This is a kid from the state of Utah who wanted to go to University of Utah and just never landed on their radar. And I know that Utah is an excellent college football program, but Utah is a state. It's not the kind of place where you have, you know, perennial 10 or five star players each and every year. That's a lot to get out right there. So the fact that, you know, he was not a Utah Ute speaks to how his story has been one of a player that has been questioned several times over, and basically every opportunity he's had to meet that challenge, he has.
So when you look at the Jets at number two, and the likelihood of what they will do there with most likely a quarterback being taken right behind Trevor Lawrence to Jacksonville, what do you think happens now? Do you think that there's going to be a decision, a fight inside that war room as to Justin Fields versus Zach Wilson, or are they really sold and they're going to keep things rolling with the Sam Darnold situation they've got right now?
I doubt. I mean, the last part can be ruled out, Matt. I just can't imagine going back to Sam Darnold, both from a performance standpoint, a financial standpoint. There's just way too many arguments to either move on from Sam Darnold entirely or definitely draft a quarterback number two and plan to have him compete with Sam right away. So I think that the Jets probably, I mean, the reality is if you've got 10 or 11 opinions you're soliciting, the likelihood is you're going to have a handful of people that differ from what the majority might be. That being said, I got to tell you, I do believe that the Jets will come to close to a consensus. And, you know, the tricky part about the draft process, the pre-draft process from a media standpoint, is there are times where things start to emerge and feel like consensus. And sometimes those things prove to be true. There are other times where things start to emerge as consensus, and you're like, wait, like, actually, no one was right on that. So right now, the prevailing consensus seems to be that Zach Wilson is the number two player in this draft because the Jets are most likely to take him number two overall. But I think it's possible the Jets are going to have more conversations about Fields versus Wilson versus Trey Lance versus maybe even Zach Jones, Mac Jones, over the next handful of weeks here.
Interesting. Phil Yates, VSBN, joining us here on Pushing the Odds. That was my next question. Okay, so the Jimmy Garoppolo situation, publicly now, the Niners are telling everybody that, look, we are committed to Jimmy Garoppolo. They've told Jimmy Garoppolo, you're our starter for this year, even though they've made the trade up to number three to go ahead and take what's going to be a quarterback. Do you believe, do you buy that? And does it make it more likely that Trey Lance is going there to sit for a year behind Jimmy Garoppolo? Or do you think this is all just posturing and trying to, you know, bang the bushes, if you will, to find who could trade for what if someone is interested in Jimmy Garoppolo?
No, I think he'll be the starter in week one. The way that that changes is if they get a great offer. But Matt, when you're orchestrating a trade, especially a significant one, the first rule is to maximize your leverage, right? The 49ers, if they're trying to trade Jimmy Garoppolo right now, did the opposite of that. If you made Jimmy Garoppolo available for a trade 3 weeks ago or a month ago, the market's going to look much different than it is right now. Who has $25 million in cap space to acquire a quarterback at the moment? The answer is virtually no team does. And especially a team that you think has, you know, a team that has a real quarterback need, right? Like, there are teams with cap space, but the Jaguars are going to draft Trevor Lawrence. Other teams already have quarterbacks in place. So I truly believe the thinking was this. They feel like the roster is good enough to win right now. They understand that next year their roster payroll is going to change a lot. Nick Bosa is extension eligible. Fred Warner needs a new contract. They've got Trent Williams now making $20 million a year. Kyle Juszczyk is far and away the highest paid fullback in the NFL. You've got a lot of players who are already being paid at or near the top of their respective position market in San Francisco. And that doesn't include all the guys that are making solid money, not top of the line, but solid money. They got a really good roster. George Kittle also included in that, of course. A year from now, when those two players are making top of the market, think about how much that changes the need to have a quarterback contract that is of rookie value. And if you draft a Trey Lance at pick three, he develops for a season, and the next year you hand over the keys. I'm not saying this is a direct facsimile of the Chiefs with Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes, right, but we saw how their roster flexibility was impacted by Patrick Mahomes being on a rookie contract for the first 2 years of his starting career.
Do you think Bill Belichick's eyeballing that, or do you think he wants to bring in a veteran, maybe a Garoppolo or somebody like that, into the room? We know they want to add a quarterback, but would they prefer to be a rookie that would be on a cheap deal?
I think every team would prefer to have a rookie on a cheap deal if he's a really good player, right? I mean, But the Patriots right now, I think the plan is pretty clearly going into the season with Cam as their starter. You know, the Patriots, and this was only further cemented with the 49ers trade, they could be a team that right now has just been squeezed from the first-round quarterback market because it feels like a darn near lock that the first three picks in the 2021 NFL draft will be quarterbacks. I mean, you'd be very surprised if it wasn't. And then you got to figure at pick four, the Falcons could take a quarterback. Pick eight, You certainly could see the Panthers take a quarterback at pick 9. The Broncos could certainly take a quarterback. So if the Patriots are going to get in the mix for this quarterback market, they're going to have to trade up. And the question you have to ask is, you know, how much do you want to trade up? If the cost to move from 12 to 3 was 2 extra first-round picks and a third-round pick, the Patriots, if they're going to go from 15 to 4 or 5, it's going to be at least that, if not a little bit more. So a bit of a tricky situation for any team, because the 49ers kind of got ahead of the price curve here a little bit. I know they paid a ton, but that price would only go up if they were waiting a little bit longer.
Phil, we'll wrap with this. We talked about the top 4 being most likely quarterbacks, but at 5, we're hearing that Joe Burrow is pushing the Bengals to go get Ja'Marr Chase, who I love. We know the Bengals are looking offensive line, but with the Dolphins at 6, most likely taking a wide receiver, could you see the Bengals going wide out and maybe a Ja'Marr Chase at 5 to give Burrow his teammates from the championship year 2 years ago?
Yeah, no, I'll say this, Matt. I think if Ja'Marr Chase went 4, it wouldn't surprise me.
Wow.
It really wouldn't. Okay. The Falcons, and people are going to say the Falcons don't need a wide receiver. Well, you tell me what happens a year from now or 2 years from now. Like, this is a team that's had to make a ton of roster decisions recently that have been difficult. Julio Jones is the highest paid wide receiver in football. Like, I don't think it's crazy to think, and I have no information here, none. But if you're a team that might undergo a transition, and when you've got a mid-30s quarterback and a wide receiver who's now over the age of 30, like, and you got a new GM and a new head coach who've got a lot of patience on their side, it's possible that Julio Jones has 2 more years in Atlanta. Who knows, right? But separate and apart, even if he has 5 more years from Atlanta, like, which he absolutely 100% well could, like, Ja'Marr Chase might be the best player other than Trevor Lawrence in this draft. That's how special he is. So I don't think he's going to make it too far down the board, but 4, 5, 6, all those spots make sense, in my opinion, for Ja'Marr Chase. There's no place where he could go where I wouldn't love the selection.
I'm with you. I call Ja'Marr Chase the best player on that championship team, including Joe Burrow, and people get mad at me when I say that, but I think the kid is incredible. I think he's absolutely wild.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a superstar in the NFL. Whoever winds up getting him, if the Bengals get him, I think it would be a smart move, even though protecting their asset in Joe Burrow is definitely something they've got to address at some point in the future. Field, great to hear from you, man. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate your time.
All right, man. Take care. Have a good one, buddy.
That is Field Yates of ESPN at Field Yates joining us here on Pushing the Odds. Always great to get a hold of him talking NFL draft. One of the guys I used to have Field Yates on way back in the day when I worked for a station in New Hampshire, and he would come on talking Patriots and whatnot, and he has become an absolute rock star for ESPN. So great to get him on. Really appreciate his time. And look, people get mad when I say that, and Ja'Marr Chase being the best player on that LSU championship team. It's just out of sight, out of mind. You forget what that kid did in the SEC. He rewrote the SEC receiving record book. He just was that good for LSU. He was unguardable, double team, didn't matter. He's incredible. And he sat for a year doing nothing but training, getting bigger and stronger and faster. Ja'Marr Chase is an absolute stud, and I would take him as a top wideout off the board. More to come. Pushing the Odds on Tuesday.